Hello and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 298. Today we're discussing the Agent Carter pilot, season one, episode one, Now Is Not the End. I'm Danielle and I'm going to be your host for this episode, and I'm so excited to be here and jump into this because I love this show so much. But before we jump into anything, I want you all to know how you can get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable, and you can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And for anyone who's new to our podcast, first of all, welcome. So excited to have you. I don't remember if we said this previously, but we are a spoiler-free podcast. So if you do want to leave us feedback, please try to make it just up to the episode that we are watching for that week, because we do have newbies handling our Twitter. If you do want to send us spoilers, please send those to our Gmail. Please email them and mark them as spoilers so that we can have a super fan take a look and make sure that our newbies do not get spoiled. And speaking of newbies and super fans, I am joined today by some of my favorite people in the world. We have super fan Karen and newbies Ariana and Nassim. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
And so we start off every episode with fun facts, just so everyone can kind of get used to our voices. So Karen, would you like to go first this week with your fun fact?
Sure would.
Okay.
This happens every week.
You think you'd be prepared for me to do
You would right think
now.
That. Okay, here's my fun fact.
Okay.
Last night, I watched Captain America, the First Avenger, because I wasn't on that episode, and I wanted to make sure I watched that before I watched the first episode of Agent Carter, and I got teary-eyed several times, which, mm-hmm. as you remember from our previous discussion, this movie is not my favorite movie, but yeah, it hit me a little bit harder this time, so I was actually really happy with that. And still, one of my absolute favorite moments is when Steve gets the flag from the top of the pole because he's smarter than everybody else.
Yep.
Makes me laugh.
Like Mulan?
Yes.
You know what? I never thought about that, but that is a great connection. Ariana, would you like to give us your fun fact?
Yes. Same as Karen. This is hard. Oh, wait, I remember something. My fun fact is that I don't check the email as much as I am supposed to. But thankfully we have Mitch, who is great and checks it all the time. So my fun fact is that when you send an email, it is Mitch's problem checking it, and he is a newbie. So make sure you write spoiler in the, not only in the body, but in the, what's it called?
Subject line.
Subject line.
I'm sorry, it's very early. Subject line.
It's all good. All good.
That was not a fun fact. It was just a fact, but an important one, I think.
Yes.
It's fun because it's Mitch.
Yes, I would agree with that. Nassim, what is your fun fact for the week?
My fun fact is that my mother told me this week that she thinks that I can survive the apocalypse because I fell kind of dramatically for just stupid tripping reasons. Like I tripped, not even like just on my own shoe or something. And so I've been like learning a lot about disinfectant and straight at all times for a week. But I'm feeling stronger as a result. So I feel kind of like Peggy would have felt dealing with a wound.
Nassim, I've never heard you speak before, but you have like a very cute voice.
Thank you.
Right? She's adorable in real life too.
Thank you.
Rub it in.
I realize that my voice has changed like since I started being on podcasts. I think I sound a little less squeaky now. Because I was listening to myself when a friend was recording me, and I was like, "Oh, that's a relief." Because I remember the first few times that I recorded, I would listen to it again, and I sounded so squeaky. I think I'm trying to eliminate that from my...
Everyone sort of develops a podcast voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't even think a lot of us do it on purpose, because for the most part, this is kind of how we sound. But like, when you're aware that you have to speak clearly and fluidly, it does kind of change the way you talk. And now I'm like, listening to my own voice, judging it. So I'm going to stop talking now.
You sound very authoritative, Karen.
Sorry.
Like in a good way.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think you sound like you do in real life.
Thanks.
All right. Well, I will wrap up our fun facts of the week. Mine actually is also podcast related. I don't think I've talked about this with many people, but as you know, Agent Carter is one of my favorite shows, and Peggy Carter is a huge role model of mine. So my fun fact that I'm hoping everyone will hold me to, because I really want to commit to this, at the end of this run, or towards the end of this run, or even by the end of this run, I want to get an Agent Carter related tattoo on my forearm.
Yeah.
Her most famous quote. I don't want to say it yet because I really want to get there and not remind people what it is. So it kind of comes as a powerful thing. But yes, so by the end of this run, by the end of our Agent Carter round of rewatchable, I will be getting an Agent Carter quote tattoo on my forearm. And it will be my first tattoo. And I'm scared and excited for it at the same time.
I just did a little chair dance for you.
Thank you.
Yes. And I don't think you need to be scared, because I feel like there's a very low possibility that Haley Atwell will get like charged for sexual harassment. So you're probably good.
Yeah, it's the same.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate that. So yes, that will be a saga to follow, hopefully throughout this series. Just like Natalie and Mitch have their like house wankers every once in a while, this will be like tattoo updates or something. I don't know. But that's looking too far ahead. Today I want to look at the pilot of Agent Carter, which I love so much and I'm so excited to discuss with you. Before we jump into those discussion points though, Ariana wrote up a really great recap, and I'm so excited to read it. So here it is. Welcome to episode one of Agent Carter, friends. It's time to hashtag Ann Peggy, this bitch. In this episode, Peggy Carter is not getting the respect she deserves. Chad Michael Murray wants her to file paperwork, and even though he is very, very hot, our Peggy is not having it because she is a war hero, damn it. Fortunately, Howard Stark is under investigation. Dominic Cooper is not getting the post Mamma Mia work he was promised, and so is available to make a cameo where he informs Peggy Carter that even though there are 100 people in the room and 99 don't believe in her, like his cousin Bradley, he's here to be her one. Howard sends Peggy on a mission with his cute little robot man, Jarvis, and she kind of saves the world but loses her roommate in the process. I think that is an amazing summary of what has happened here. I didn't think about the post Mamma Mia work, so I do want to talk about that at some point. But before we do that, I want to start at the very beginning of the episode. So this series, like the one shot that we watched last week, starts off with the end of the first Avenger, which for me is very painful because that's the part that always just gets me.
It's like salt in the wound for you.
It's very much salt in the wound. However, I think it's interesting. I didn't realize that both this pilot and the one shot started off the same. So I'm curious if having that at the beginning of the one shot made it kind of less effective here for anyone, or if it was just like a non-issue.
Maybe just because like I watched the movie, then I watched the one shot, and then I watched the pilot again, and I don't know. I mean, the end obviously of the movie is very sad. It doesn't super affect me as much, but I think what's more interesting is that despite the fact that this moment has been related to Peggy's arc multiple times at this point, it doesn't feel like this is the only thing that she's about. Like, obviously it's a huge impact on her life and her job going forward, but it doesn't feel like that's everything that she's about. And I think that's more important.
And confession time, I don't think I did my homework because I definitely, I don't know what I missed somewhere, but I did not know that this one shot existed until last night when I was reading the doc from last week.
Oh no.
So I definitely missed a memo somewhere. But I definitely feel like this, first of all, personally, well, I found it useful. I don't think that the flashback is necessary at all. I feel like this episode stands on its own, and I definitely think you can watch it without having seen the movie at all.
I mean, yeah, I think, but I think you need the scene to be able to understand some of the things that they reference in this episode. I don't know. I kind of like it. I mean, you also get to see kind of a different, more vulnerable aspect of Peggy right at the start, and then you see how she's kind of a bit more reserved now.
Personally, I think it kind of, like, from a cinematic standpoint, I think it kind of took away from the episode, but I understand why they put it in, because obviously, like, Captain America made a lot of money and a lot of people watched it, and if you can get Chris Evans in a cameo, like, you do it. So,
sure,
I understand why they put it in for this, to kind of tie it into the movie universe.
I sadly also think that the reason why they put this in is to remind kind of average moviegoers who Peggy is. Because this was an ABC, like, primetime television show. And so while it was very much targeting Marvel fans, I think they were also trying to get a larger audience, which, spoiler alert, didn't happen for reasons, which I'm sure we'll discuss at some point. And so I think whenever I am out and talking to people and people ask me about Marvel stuff, they'll ask me who my favorite character is. And I will say Agent Carter. I will say Peggy. And everyone looks at me like they're confused. Like, they don't know who she is. So I always have to kind of dumb that down, unfortunately, and say the lowest common denominator, which is Captain America's girlfriend. And then they know who she is.
Yeah.
Which I hate doing. I cringe pretty much every time I do it. So I think in addition to kind of starting the series off with, like, this emotional point and, like, showing how Peggy is, I also think it serves that purpose in a way too, because otherwise I'm not sure if people would kind of know who she was, or, like, be like, oh, I remember her face, but I can't place it. And then having that scene is kind of like, oh, it's Captain America's girlfriend.
That's so sad, though, because it really reflects even the canon that's what people associate with her more than who she is.
Yes.
Like, for herself.
Yeah. So, just in general, though, I do want to actually get into the episode, but really quickly, were any of the flashbacks, because they didn't have too many, but they had more than I remember. Did they feel like they took away from the show? Or did they kind of strike an okay balance?
I don't know. I feel like if it were another show, maybe I would have felt a bit taken aback by him. But this show has its own kind of style. Or maybe it's just because in hindsight, like, it's very different from the way that shows are filmed, and I don't know, kind of the pacing that they go with. It feels very different. So I think I just kind of took it all in stride. And there's a kind of old-fashioned style to it that I like. I don't know. I think they can pretty much get away with anything, and I will like it. Even though flashbacks usually aren't always my thing, like, it tends to feel a little bit forced. Mm-hmm. But I think it worked here just because of the way that they've styled this show.
I personally, although I did find the first flashback helpful as a casual viewer, I do wish that they hadn't included the first one, so that they would have allowed her to be established as her own, to be like, this is her show.
Yes.
And the first shot really be of just her. And then just use the flashback when she's reminiscing, like, halfway through reflecting on her life. What am I even doing? That would have been, I think, the more appropriate time. But whatever. I mean, it's exposition. It was useful for me. So, yeah.
I mean, and that's what counts. So that's good. All right. Let's talk Agent Carter. Let's talk the show. Let's not talk anymore about Captain America if we can help it. So when we meet Peg, she's getting ready for work. And she's going to work at the telephone company, but actually it's the SSR. And Ariana, I really want to hear your thoughts on this, because I am very happy you did not know that Chad Michael Murray was in the show, but he is one of the very first people that we meet. We meet him and we meet Agent Sousa in this like meeting room. And you have in our doc here, Ariana, that you're calling that he is going to be our Logan Eccles. Would you care to explain?
Yes. Okay. First of all, no one told me Chad Michael Murray would be here. If you guys had, I would have been much more excited for this show.
Surprise!
But yes, I am calling it now. Also, thank you for clarifying this man's name, because I have just been calling him Hot Brunette.
Sure.
I'm just going to look it up.
That's what I figured you meant. So I'm glad that we were on
the same Michael
page.
Murray and Hot Brunette. So
done.
Yes. So I'm predicting, okay, this is my prediction. Let's just go all out now. So we have these two guys and they're very different, and clearly there's going to be like this, like, which one's she going to pick? Because obviously I'm all about the shipping. So I think that they're setting us up to be like, oh, you know, Chad Michael Murray, he's like the bad guy. But I really think he's going to be the Logan Eccles that we find out has a heart of gold, even though that's not like the healthiest way to look at men. It is the fun way on TV. So I'm going to go there.
And for clarification, Logan Eccles is one of the main characters of Veronica Mars, which we also covered, like, and rewatchable. If you
want, he's like the bully who, you know, turns out to be, he's got some issues of his own. But yes. And then Sousa, aka Hot Brunette, he seems like a nice guy, but I think that he's actually going to be like kind of a bad guy. But I still like him. I'm still into it. Even though he's probably bad, it gives him an edge. I like it.
Sure. I kind of feel like the bad boy ending up being like the good boy, the nice guy. I don't know. I feel like that doesn't really go with what Peggy's about. But we'll see.
But they're all secret agents. Somebody has to be a double agent.
Yeah. We'll see.
I mean, you also had a note in here, Ariana, that about your feelings about how Sousa stuck up for Peggy during that briefing. And you couldn't tell whether or not it was like an evil thing to do or not. I think that scene is really interesting because you have it. I think it's interesting in that Peggy's reaction to it is completely valid and surprising in a good way, but also unexpected. Like he expects her to thank him, even though he is trying to help. He kind of regresses because he kind of expects her to thank him.
I don't know if he expects her to thank him, but I think he expected her to be okay with him standing up for her, because he didn't seem like he was waiting there for a handout. He seemed like almost
right. I mean, that is a better way to phrase it.
Yeah. But that scene is so interesting to me and something that I always look forward to kind of picking apart, because I think there's a lot to be said about, you know, standing up for other people when they can't do it for themselves, but also being aware when they can and kind of letting them fight their own battles.
I also think it's very, I mean, okay. As progressive as the series is in some ways, I do feel like it is very 5 years ago in a lot of ways.
Yes.
In that I think we have matured in many ways. Like now, in some ways, I don't know how to feel about this scene, because I do understand where she's coming from. But also, like, now, post Me Too, we are very much like men when you see something, please say something, mm-hmm. because it is much harder as a woman to stick up for things in certain places, in certain ways. So he's being an ally here, which I appreciate. So I don't know. It also goes with like the lipstick thing later on, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I think
I don't know. I understand where she's coming from, and she is like a war veteran, so she has a very different mentality. But I don't like putting him down because he was being nice.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, I mean, it takes place at a very complicated moment in women's history where that transition is happening, and Peggy has gone from being, you know, in the war and someone who handles things to being expected to just kind of sit back and do the easy stuff. So I think in that context, she is rightly frustrated at being the damsel in distress, because that's not who she has been this whole time. Yeah, personally, if it was me, I do feel like that would be kind of a weird approach to take. But I think with the moment that they're in right now, and she has to assert herself, it's the only way for her to have a position in the organization that isn't just she's a secretary or, you know. I did feel weird later because of how she used like ladies things as mm-hmm. an excuse, because I feel like that kind of undermined the progress she was doing before. But I think that's important, or at least that's my excuse for the things that maybe now don't really hold up in the light of like what we've learned about feminism. But yeah,
so I want to talk a little bit more about actually like her relationship with her coworkers, because I think it was more overtly gross in the one shot, whereas it's yeah. more realistic and dialed back here. I'm not sure if there are any thoughts on that.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
The one shot was, I think, because they had to condense it into 15 minutes.
Right.
Like, you had to get to this. Show how disgusting it was working with these guys and how she was just relegated to the worst possible lowest totem pole position there. And here it's a little more subtle, and I think people are aware of the fact that she is a veteran and all this kind of stuff, but still a woman, and she's still doing the things that they don't want to do. But it's a little less like in your face about it, which is probably better for the show overall.
Yeah. I mean, I will say though that this time around, because we had just seen the one shot, Chief Dooley was a little more extreme than I remember him being in his treatment towards her, which I was not a huge fan of. But I know that it would be very difficult for me to work in a workplace like this. When Agent Carter first came out, I kind of worked in a slightly similar workplace, just in that like my the owner of the company was kind of Chief Dooley like, but I don't think I could be able to do it with so many people. And so it amazes me how quick on her feet Peggy is. Like when she forwards the phone calls, or she kind of knows how to pick her battles and like win the battles. As you were, Nassim, you brought up like the part about her using the lady issues. Completely understand, like it's not great, but like she knows that that's the only way that she'd be able to get out.
Yeah.
But at work, the SSR is investigating Howard Stark. We get this kind of little montage and a reintroduction to Howard Stark, which is kind of lovely. You see him in the courtroom. And basically, they think that he's a potential traitor. His weapons or his inventions are showing up on a black market, and they're being used in dangerous ways. So,
like father, like son?
Let's talk about Howard Stark. Karen, I want to hold off on you for a second, because, yeah, we're not going there yet. Newbies, how did you feel about Howard Stark coming back for this, and what sort of role do you think he's going to have moving forward?
I'm very excited. And I am hopeful that the series' declining ratings will make them, will force them to hire him full time.
Okay.
He is so fun. He's really fun. I like that he has this kind of like flirty tone with her, but he's also very respectful. Yes. It shows that you can be, you know, the bad boy and like kind of cocky, but that doesn't mean you have to be rude. So I really like their relationship and how she kind of lets him get away with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love like the insight into Jarvis, you know, it's really cute. It kind of helps you understand how things happen in the future.
Karen, before you go, I do also want to state that for all of the reasons that Nassim just said, Howard Stark is my favorite Stark because he's not an asshole. He's just a really gross flirt sometimes. Karen, what are your feelings on Howard Stark?
Yeah, complicated because as a Tony fan, you kind of see his perspective in that his father wasn't there for him and that their relationship wasn't great and that he was always gone and blah, blah, blah. And then you get this insight into him. And I 100% agree. I think he's wonderful and delightful. He's really fun. He is kind of cocky. He's a huge flirt, but Nassim, I agree. Like he is really respectful of Peggy, not only of her just as a person in general, but as an agent, like he recognizes her talent and he knows that he can trust her. He knows that she'll help. He knows that she understands that he is trying to do the right thing. And I do like the parallel between him and Tony in that, you know, their weapons are being used by bad guys and both of them decide to do something about it in vastly different ways, but ultimately, you know, the same thing kind of gets done there. And I appreciate that. I will admit that I think Tony's perspective on his father is probably super, super, super jaded. And I'm actually really glad that we can get this insight into him. And this is also a very young Howard Stark. So when he gets a little bit older and has a family and everything, I think he does change quite a bit. But this version of him, super on board with.
And I mean, he hires Peggy. Like, out of everyone, he trusts Peggy
mm-hmm.
to find the missing formula that can, as Ariana here says, that can blow up and destroy the world. It's kind of like everyone's after this thing. Where is the thing? Gotta find the thing.
Yeah.
But in hiring Peggy and trying to find the thing, we get introduced to Jarvis. And there's a note in here, which is now we know kind of where Tony's Jarvis comes from, like the name. This is Jarvis's namesake right here. And he is an interesting character, I think. We don't know much about him at this point. We know that he works for Howard Stark. But he's got more going on than he kind of lets show. What were first impressions on Jarvis?
I love him. He's everything. I love him so much.
Okay.
He's such a good husband. He's so devoted. But he's also so out of his depth here. Or like, I don't know, he hasn't really understood what all of this is going to mean for his life. So I love that he's like, I'm available all the time up until like 9 because that's when my wife and I go to bed. Like, I think he's really adorable. I really enjoy, he's like, every time he appears, I'm just really happy.
I have several feelings about him. Taking him at face value, I really appreciate this nice man who has such a good work-life balance and who knows how to tell his boss, like, hey, I'm at home now. You can't call me. Like, those are life goals. Good for you.
100%.
But I also feel like this doesn't make any sense at all. Like, Howard Stark is a very smart man with a lot of money and I'm sure a lot of confidants. Why would he like set his butler on this girl to save the world? Like, oh yeah, this is the guy who's going to help you. That doesn't make any sense to me. So clearly he's got to have like some other stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's probably like a Shepherd Book situation where he was like a mercenary in a former life. So yeah, I'm calling it that he's got some his own secret agent stuff going on.
I feel like I wasn't suspicious enough. Like, I just watched it and I was like, oh yeah. But like, now that you're saying things about all these characters, I'm like, that's true. Someone's out to get her.
Oh, I don't mean like in a bad way. I just mean like
there's more than meets the eye.
Yeah.
It's like logically, I feel like Howard Stark is smarter than to just give her his regular butler.
But he makes the
to plays. Help her.
Yeah. You need a man who can make soufflés.
You do need a man who can make a soufflé. This is very true. How do we like Peggy and Jarvis as a pair? Are you interested in seeing more of them? Are they like, for me, I can't say much about their relationship from this point forward, but in this episode, I enjoy like the small moments between them and I feel like they click in really interesting ways. But then again, like, I don't know if that's informed from what I know happens later on.
They're cute, but it is putting two straight men together. So,
okay.
I don't know. I mean, they are cute though, but I do wish that they had some more comedic relief.
Okay.
That's why I appreciate Howard Stark. I do wish that they had like another like third person.
Yeah, like the oddball, the goofball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Karen, how did you feel about Jarvis's introduction here? Because, I mean, Jarvis means a lot to Tony in terms of, like, the AI, and this is kind of the basis for him.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about Jarvis, a lot. And there's a line later that we will talk about when it happens that gives me a lot of feelings. Hashtag no comment until then. But I have a lot of feelings about him.
All pretty much good though, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Right before, or I do want to actually get into the story because there is quite a bit going on in this episode, but I do want to quickly talk about, or at least bring up, the other characters that we meet in this episode. We meet Colleen, who was, we'll get there, but who's Peggy's roommate. She hasn't known her for all of that long. It was only just a few months and she was kind of crashing with Colleen. We meet Angie, who works at the Automat, which, side note, I wish those things still existed because I would totally eat there like every day. Angie can be a little much and she's kind of fun and she calls Peggy English. Is she a character that you're hoping to see more of or see more integrated into the story?
I like her. She's fun. I feel like she's, even though she doesn't really know what's going on with Peggy, she's someone who can like keep up with how smart Peggy is. And I don't know. I feel like Peggy has a person on her level, especially, you know, a woman who can connect with her on, like, relate with her. So I think that's nice for her because she's surrounded by men and most of them don't understand her anyway. So I like her. I hope she's around more.
I think I know a spoiler about her. I am not sure, but okay. I might. So I'm going to say nothing.
Okay.
But just as like the only surviving woman on this show, yeah, I hope she's...
I mean, yes, we will get to that for sure. Because that's something I do want to talk about. But let's jump into the story because we haven't done that yet. We've met all of our main characters for the most part. And I think they're an interesting bunch. And they're all kind of working around the idea of Howard Stark's inventions getting stolen. And so the SSR gets a tip that there is a stolen invention or something going down at this nightclub. And Peggy is all about it. She wants to kind of run interference so that she can get whatever it is first. They think that they are after a sheet of paper that has a formula in it. Little does she know that it turns out to be a little bit more than that. Ariana put a note in here that I completely agree with. Hayley Atwell does not look good in the blonde wig. It does not do much for me either. And actually, this time around, I picked up the fact that the club owner, the only thing that he lets slide are blondes and money. I didn't hear that before, and I was always wondering why she made herself go blonde. But unfortunately, that's the reason.
I really feel like Karen.
I did. Looks good as a blonde.
Okay, no. I think she could look good as a blonde, but not in that shade. It's such a like yellow shade, and then the wig itself is so ugly. Like it clearly looks like a wig.
I don't know. I'm with you, Karen. Like
yes,
I kind of liked it, but I also feel like how long the wig was and how it was styled was on purpose, because that way when people talk about her, they talk about her as the blonde, because that's her distinguishing feature. So it's much harder to track her down. Of course, that might have also been what ended up getting her roommate killed. But
and this is kind of our first look at Agent Carter undercover, which it's not a spoiler, but we'll see a couple more things. So not only did she put on this wig and traipse around as a blonde, but she also puts on an American accent here as well. She doesn't talk too much, but she does kind of go into an American accent and tries to say, I don't know, like common exclamations and stuff, like in this American accent.
I really miss that. I'm so upset I missed that.
Yeah, she doesn't talk a lot, like I said, but if you go back, she is speaking in an American accent. She says things like, thank you, sugar, or when she's trying to seduce the club owner.
Didn't she call the guy doll, too?
Mm-hmm.
That made me laugh. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, so she's really leaning into the normally harmful kind of like female stereotypes or like the way that men see women. Which also includes stealing the bomb by seducing the guy, including poison lipstick, which I know, Ariana, you don't seem to be a fan of that.
I don't know. Like, to me, in a lot of ways, like, I know, I looked it up, and I know that the showrunners were women, but I saw this, the pilot was written by a man, and to me it just feels very obvious. Like this just felt like such a like Joss Whedon's interpretation of feminine hero to me. In that, like, I'm not opposed to her using like her feminine wiles to her advantage, but I just kind of wish that it didn't have to be the first time we see her in action. She's getting the upper hand because of it. Like, I wish we could get to see her as an agent, because we know that she is clearly very capable since she's gotten where she is. I don't know. And yeah. I really do hate the poison lipstick trope. I feel like it's used all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And people should get something new.
I do want to make a note before I forget, and I just looked it up to double check, but you said it was not written by women, which is correct. It was actually written by the same writers who wrote the Captain America movies and who are still writing for Marvel, Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely. So they're very much like an MCU writing team, if that provides any basis at all. So yes,
I mean, I don't really care for the movie, so that makes sense to me.
Okay, yeah. So it tracks.
I just, the poison lipstick is always so strange for me, because I feel like I would always like accidentally lick my lips or something.
I think about that too.
Knocking yourself out. It's so hard. I don't know.
It is so hard.
I don't think it's very practical.
Fun fact though, I So there's a company called Besame Cosmetics. They're based out of California, and they do old-fashioned makeup, and they're the ones who do all the makeup for the show. And they had an Agent Carter line come out last year. And I bought, they have like the Peggy red lipstick, and they put it in that Sweet Dreams canister. And so I own that. And every time I put it on, I'm like, oh yeah, Poison. I'm just going to knock people out today. So fun fact, but yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Poison thing. And it also feels weird because Peggy is very much a brawler in terms of like her fighting style and just like her survival style. We see her knocking people out. I'm going to talk about this, and I know a lot of other people in the Agent Carter fandom love it, but like she knocks someone out by taking a stapler to their face. Like
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. She's very practical and she's very resourceful. And so I do think that the lipstick kind of feels out of the ordinary for just who she has been established as a character. Just like who that is. It kind of also doesn't jive fully, but Peggy goes in looking for a formula, and she ends up finding a bomb that is active and could honestly detonate at any time. So she finds out what she needs to do to kind of deactivate it, and decides to go home, which not a great decision, but she also knows that she has the ingredients that she needs at home.
Okay, so was that the explanation? Because this was very frustrating to me.
Sure,
like, why are you taking the bomb home? That seems like the last thing you should do. Like, go out into an open field or something. Like, I was just thinking, oh, if she messes up one thing, everyone here is dead. The entire block.
Yeah.
It's such a cliche to like, oh, I need this and that ingredient. Good thing I'm a woman and I have perfume. It was just like a little bit too much. I always feel like they should just go to a lab. Plus she probably has a lab. Like she probably has access to a lab. And I don't know.
I don't think she does at this point, because we have Jarvis who knows a guy and he has access.
And also
what?
I mean, I was just thinking of this now. Mm-hmm. Assuming she's so smart and she knows what it takes to, oh no, I guess that they told her later, didn't they?
They told her what.
Why did she show up with the thing?
But like, he didn't say what concentration. He didn't say. I don't know.
I was thinking that too.
Why didn't they give her the materials beforehand? Like it was just like if it's just stuff she has laying around the house, why didn't they tell her what it was so that she brought it with her so that later on?
I think it's because they were just expecting it to be the formula itself. Like they weren't expecting it to already be weaponized. And so they didn't give her the information.
Yeah. I forget what he said. He said something like it's acetone or something like that, but it was just like,
sodium carbonate,
you can't just mix random things that are bottled in your house. Like what if they have some other component that reacts in some way? It's not safe. You need to know what concentration it is. It's such a cliche. But I mean,
there was something. Don't question the science.
There was something. There's still something like comforting about the cliches. And I feel like it didn't take away from the episode. It just kind of.
To me, it took away because I was like, I feel like she should be smarter than this. But whatever.
I mean, I didn't even think about the concentrations. I was already thinking that she was smart for knowing what ingredients in her house were like the chemical ingredients that she needed to disarm this. So they got me, and I'm really glad you're pointing this out because I didn't even consider the concentrations. But she does disarm the bomb in her bathroom. And she doesn't even get a chance for a celebratory swig of, I think it was whiskey, when she hears something in her apartment.
She takes out right next to the freaking bomb. It's not activated, but like, don't drink things near that, please.
She was nervous. She needed the drink to calm her nerves, okay? but she doesn't get it, so there's that. Because that one of the guys with the scar on his throat follows her home. The guy who was going to buy the bomb from the club owner, follows her home, murders her roommate, and then tries to murder her. And she kicks him out a window, which I thought was kind of cool. Or she used things in her kitchen to kind of beat him up and then kicked him out a window. So that happened. And I know in the doc here, Ariana, you have a sort of like diversity check or a checkpoint here. And the one Black character we're introduced to is dead. And the two women that we know of other than Peggy, one of them is dead. And this is all within the first half of the episode, I think.
First half.
Yeah. I will say that while the show is great and while I like it for what it does, how it makes me feel about like women empowerment, it's not perfect. And diversity is definitely one of its weaker points. They try to make up for it at certain points, but it does unfortunately fall short of expectations.
For me, this death, just from like a creative level, frustrates me in that I don't think it was earned in any way whatsoever. Like we've heard
her death?
Yeah.
Or both?
No, the roommate's death.
Sure.
I just, because we've heard her speak, like literally she said like two sentences. I know nothing about her. I don't know like what she does. I don't know anything about her hopes, ambitions, like nothing about this girl. She's just some girl who woke up groggy-eyed and is like, oh, you look good in your dress. I mean, she's nice, but she's basically just like a standby. So her death is kind of meaningless, except that it's frustrating because she's the only other woman, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So if they wanted to kill her, I feel like they should have waited until the end. And also they should have earned the death by making her more prominent throughout the episode.
It feels very much like a stereotypical fridging where the main character is affected by this death.
That's the point of the death.
Yeah, and like you don't really care about it because it either happened before the thing started or right at the beginning when it started. And you're like, okay, this drives them forward, but there's no emotional impact for us. And that's the only thing that this woman, like that was her only purpose. And it doesn't, just because Peggy is a woman doesn't change the fact that that's still a very stereotypical trope and that they leaned into it.
Yeah, I think there definitely could have been a better way to do this. I do think that it was good to kind of have something very dramatic and tragic to happen at the end of the first episode.
But this isn't the end.
It's not the end.
So that's why it feels so like...
Yeah, maybe if they had moved it like right to the end. I don't know. I feel like when they raise the stakes like that, it does help you kind of... I don't know, feel more anticipation for what's going to happen next.
But again, you're right.
I was thinking of it for some reason, like it was at the end.
I agree that I do think they needed to raise the stakes, but I don't feel like this did raise the stakes because if anything, the stakes are lowered. The only person she knows basically is dead. So there are no stakes left. I don't know.
That's fair. I will say that, like, it always does surprise me that she dies because I wasn't sure if it was going to be that kind of show. You know what I mean? And this shows that it is. I still don't like how it happened, but I do think it does raise the stakes in one manner. And she is starting to get to know Jarvis, and we're introduced to Angie and, you know, the agents that she works with. She's going to continue getting to know more people. So I think those stakes are going to kind of thread themselves throughout the series. But I definitely don't disagree that like this was supposed to be like, it's super impactful for Peggy, but it doesn't really do much for us.
It's basically only impactful in that it adds to guilt that she has. And that like, and so it can set her up for the line, like I did this, it made me feel good, but it also got the only person right now that I care about killed. So not great. And I actually always forget that Colleen exists, which is very much telling of how little her death kind of means to us, which we've been talking about. And I hate to say this, but this death does kind of bring on a scene that I do enjoy. And that's the one where Peggy and Jarvis meet up for breakfast at the automat. And they kind of sit back to back and they have a little bit of a moment. And it's unfortunate that her death brings this character building or relationship building moment around. But I do kind of like it, although they weren't really covert about it at all. They were very clear.
Not in any way. Okay, I understand why they did this, because it is like a cute shot.
Yes.
Like, visually, it's very nice to see. But if you pan out any farther than that, they look ridiculous.
Yes.
They're sitting there. There's literally, they're not even, they don't even have food in front of them. And they're talking to themselves. Very clearly, and there's like no one around, so very clearly they're talking to each other. This is very much like a Hogshead moment, like Harry Potter, you're not being very covert here.
Yeah, and I mean, they don't do it just once in this episode, they do it multiple times. Yeah, but so basically they find out that Jarvis consoles her, and they want to go take the diffuse bomb to a scientist to see what it's all about. And Peggy doesn't have a scientist on hand, but Jarvis does, or he knows a guy, he has a connection. And this is just a point that I want to make. Nassim and Ariana, have you guys watched the Iron Man movies at all?
I saw the first two.
I've seen them all, but I don't remember the last one very well.
Okay.
Is this guy related to the guy who
helps Karen screams internally?
Say that again, Ariana.
I said, is this guy related to the guy who helps him get out of the cave? That's the only guy.
No, he's not related to him. It's just like a small tidbit kind of fun fact that they throw in here, which they do often in Agent Carter. They'll kind of throw call outs to the movies here. But Karen, did you want to take this one really quickly?
Yes, but also I missed this. So
seriously? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, okay. They meet Dr. Anton Vanko, which is related to Whiplash from the second Iron Man movie.
Mickey Rourke? His yeah. Crazy character with like the weird power lines that he chucks at everyone.
Yeah. So this will be his father.
And the reason why that character gets so angry and goes after Tony is because Tony's dad in the future ends up like screwing over this scientist.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a fun thing I wanted to call out. Mm-hmm. And it's very much an exposition moment. When we meet the scientist, and I will be honest, I have to rewind a lot during Agent Carter, because there are exposition bits where if you miss them and miss the connections of things, like I get lost. And so I did that a couple times with this scene, but basically Anton Vanko kind of points them towards the Roxxon Corporation, basically saying that they helped in creating the bomb. And so that's how Peggy and Jarvis know to put on their adventure outfits and go to the Roxxon Corporation, where we see the guy who was selling the bomb, along with a Roxxon scientist, like creating more, and he has a whole truckload of them, which isn't great. It's not cool. But then we also see that the guy who was a seller is somehow tied to the guy who tried murdering Peggy in her apartment. Two separate guys. They both have had, what's the procedure called? Or like they both have scars on their necks, like on their throats. And the guy has to use that I should have done my research beforehand because I don't know the technical terms, but basically he needs that apparatus to help him speak because he cannot speak normally. And we get him saying, Leviathan is coming. And that's all that basically is told before we have this very much chase scene trying to get out of this place that's about to explode. So in terms of action sequences and in terms of like ends of episodes, was this an interesting sort of sequence of events? Did we enjoy seeing Peggy do something like this, or did it seem a little much and this a lot
is,
at once?
This is what I love the most.
Okay.
Like, I love seeing her doing all these things that I'm used to seeing guys do in movies, and especially, I don't know, there's something about it that is, it's very different from like when you have, oh, a strong female character in a movie that is led by a man, you know? It's different when it's all focused on her and her chasing down the bad guys. Also, my boyfriend pointed out when we were watching yesterday that Roxxon is the same company like as Roxxon Oil from Cloak and Dagger.
Yes.
Which is very interesting. I didn't notice that before.
Yes. So Roxxon is one of those corporations that is well known throughout the MCU. It's kind of behind a lot of things. It can kind of be shady at times. So yeah, good call. Ariana, you have a note in here that says this whole sequence reminded you very much of Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that connection.
My grandpa likes watching Walker, Texas Ranger a lot.
My dad does too.
To watch that when he mm-hmm. I go over to his house. I understand people who would love this. Like, I remember thinking at the time, I was like, oh, I bet Karen loves this.
Karen?
Personally,
yes.
Okay. Just continue.
Personally, to me, it's like, I don't really care for action sequences like this. Like, to be honest, like, I kind of tuned out and started playing solitaire. Because to me, it feels like nothing like emotion. Like, I would rather watch people talk about their feelings. But I understand why people like it. It's a necessary part. It's like Walker, Texas Ranger.
Like Walker, Texas Ranger.
I think what's important, I mean, I love action sequences and especially love Peggy's style of fighting. But what I really liked about this scene was the relationship that's building between Peggy and Jarvis
mm-hmm.
and him helping her with the car and him not really knowing what to do and her kind of being the bold, crazy one who's just like, yep, this is what we're going to do now. We need to run really fast. And the role reversal there is nice, but also just them kind of still trying to get to know each other, but being there for each other is an interesting dynamic.
Like, he questions Peggy for sure, especially when she just tells him to keep driving. so she can jump on the top of his car, but he doesn't question her in a way that other men would question her. Like, he doesn't question her and
he questions her as a sane person.
Correct. Correct. Which is really nice to see.
So full disclosure, I'm a newbie, but not 100% because I have watched season one before, but okay. I don't remember it because I watched it such a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea what happens, but what I do remember is when I watched this first episode and watched this action sequence, feeling like I finally understood why boys get into superheroes when they're kids. Because I had never found a way to connect myself with Spider-Man or Superman or Batman, which is what most kids, especially boys, get into. And like they're like, I'm Spider-Man. And then they dress up as Spider-Man and they jump around the yard pretending that that's who they are. I never felt that. And when I watched this episode and watched this action sequence, I finally understood and I was like, she's my Spider-Man or my Superman. I want to dress up as her and run around doing these fun things, you know? saving the world. So that's what I really appreciate about the action sequence in this episode.
I love that because that's how I feel about this show as well. So that makes me happy to hear that you do too. Okay. So the way it ends, and it's the last thing I kind of want to call attention to in this episode, is the entirety of Roxanne explodes. But while Peggy and Jarvis are fleeing, while he's like stepping on the gas trying to get the hell out of there, we see something slightly odd or slightly different about the explosion. And that is the fact that it was an explosion, but a slight implosion at the same time. I'm not sure if you guys caught that, but the bumper of the car, as well as the license plate, got pulled off of Jarvis's car and sucked back into whatever was going on. So I will leave that note there in case there are any predictions once we get to that portion of the show, but I did want to point that out as well. So obviously it's one of Howard Stark's inventions, so it's not going to be anything normal. But that was something to kind of pay attention to. And so it looks like Jarvis and Peggy pulled an all-nighter. We see them back at the automat. Again, the automat is going to be a very common place to go. Which I'm always very happy about. We see them back at the automat, basically patting each other on the shoulder, getting to know each other. Jarvis leaves, and we see more of this guy who has been harassing Angie at work. And Peggy kind of takes the confidence, I think, that she has been given throughout this whole ordeal, minus Colleen's death, and sticks up for Angie in a really interesting way. And I'm curious how that played for the newbies. Was this something helpful? Or did it seem kind of out of place?
I understand it was like meant to be a cute gesture, but honestly, I was like, I feel like this is very extreme. But it's fine. Girl power.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's fun. It's fun to watch.
And as I put in here, I was like, this is illegal, right? But yeah.
I mean, probably.
Unfortunately, he wouldn't have taken her seriously otherwise. Other way. Yeah. And like, it's not like she was actually going to do it. So it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny. And I like seeing something like that because, again, as we've brought up, this is very much a move that we've seen men do in these kinds of stories, like spies and everything like that. Yeah. But it's interesting to see a woman asserting her power in this way, especially at a time where, like, she very much has less power than usual. And just to scare him so much that he just starts throwing dollar bills on the table is really entertaining to me. And Angie just kind of looks at it like, I don't know what's going on, but okay. So the episode ends with a sort of iconic shot of Peggy putting on her sunglasses, smiling and walking into the sun, which I use that gif for everything. You probably will notice it more now that we've seen this. But there's that. And then we also see Jarvis watching her from his car. And he's on the phone with Howard Stark and basically say things along the lines of, yes, she's going to suit this pretty well. She has no idea what's going on.
Do we know it's Stark?
I believe so. Cause he calls him sir and he's teaching him how to create a certain mixed drink. And he's like, I can't be there for you all the time. You'll have to learn this for yourself. So it is very much Howard Stark on the phone. Okay.
Why doesn't he have a second butler? He's so rich.
Maybe he has trust issues.
Also, that's the only thing that makes logical sense.
Sure.
I didn't really take this as like, I mean, I know it's designed for us to be like, ooh, is he conspiring against Peggy or something? I don't know. But I don't know. I kind of feel like it's a red herring and that it's something else. I don't know. I'm not sure though. I don't think Jarvis is evil, but I'm guessing it's just something stupid that Stark did and he doesn't want her to know.
Okay. So in looking at this episode as a whole, and I will get to this other question in here, Ariana, just one second. But in looking at this episode as a whole, I'm curious, would, as a casual viewer, would this episode have enticed you to continue watching? Do you think this was a good pilot?
I'm going to say the answer, as someone who did watch the pilot back in the day, no.
Okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
It made me watch, but it did not make me watch season two. So I don't know what that means. Like I said, I don't remember what happened, but I remember having a positive impression of it. So I don't really know. I really like this episode. I think it's fun. But I do think that if it were to air now, it probably wouldn't be successful at all. Like, even less than it was back then. Because I feel like we now have more shows with more interesting female characters. Well, not more interesting, because Peggy's interesting on her own. But, like, with more interesting situations they put them in. And kind of, you know, written by women. And
I think, though, that in that way, I feel like it would be more successful. I think that a lot of its issues that I had with it are very easily fixable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that one.
I do think it's just better writers, maybe a better budget. I'm not sure.
I mean, they spend a lot of money on this.
Yeah, but like, I don't know.
Not on the wig, but on everything else.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like, for example, something that you would see on Netflix, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think Netflix has a higher level of quality now.
It's a different production value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it were to come out again, then, like, if there were to, like, be, oh, season three now, they would really, really have to make some very drastic changes for it to really fit in the market at all. Because what Marvel has, like, with Jessica Jones is, like, just the, and not even, like, about the characters, but the production quality and the type of writing that goes into that, I feel is just very, very different.
This is kind of, so this aired in the kind of winter hiatus for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they were both airing on ABC, so I would say that if this was a Netflix show, I do think that they probably would step it up in those ways. But the most comparable show production-wise would be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I don't know if anyone besides me has watched that one.
I saw the pilot.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll watch the pilot of almost anything.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, though, because this just... Sorry, Nassim, this really bothered me. Netflix pays like nothing. Netflix is very, very stingy. The reason those Marvel shows look good is because of Marvel.
Interesting.
ABC 100% all network shows pay much more.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm glad that you brought that up, because there's a different production behind them in terms of the teams involved. And so the ABC television, those shows, including Agent Carter, had more involvement with those who were involved with the movies, whereas Marvel TV on Netflix kind of operated slightly differently. And so that's why there's also, that's another reason why there's a difference between the productions of the two, because they had different teams behind them.
Yeah, definitely. And mm-hmm. I mean, I do think that it's also just an issue of, like, the time.
Yes.
And that's why I love this show, and I think it's great. I think if it were to come out in this same form this year, it would be a missed opportunity. Because today I feel like we could have avoided a lot of the mistakes and done something maybe even more interesting. Then again, I don't remember the rest of season one, so who knows. But that doesn't take away at all from, like, the value of Agent Carter itself, because I like this series. I like this episode. I enjoyed it a lot.
Awesome. And Karen, how was it for me? I mean, I was watching this right before we started recording and I felt pretty much the same way as I did the first time I watched this show, which is to say extremely happy, giddy, and just my heart was swelling five sizes too large. How was it for you, Karen, to revisit this pilot?
It was good. I also watched this live like every week when it was out. This was very much something that I looked forward to, and I had trouble not watching the next episode, which I didn't want to do because I didn't want to get any of my facts mixed up or anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really liked it. And I will say, like, our discussion made me look at a couple of things differently, and I really appreciate that because I knew when I watched this originally, I had blinders on because I was just so excited that Peggy had her own television show, that she was such an interesting, strong character and a woman leading a show, that I was like, yes, let's do this. But like, I, at this point, I'm ready to kind of see some of the issues with it and talk about that and talk about how that impacts the series overall. So I really like doing that, but it still makes me happy and it still makes me thankful that they tried this, because I do think Peggy is a really important character. And even if they didn't hit the mark every single time, the fact that they gave her a chance is really important to me.
Couldn't agree more. And I'm excited to continue to see how your opinion about the show changes and how mine changes as we do these discussions, because I think I got a lot of, out of this one as well. So a few more points that I want to make before we get into our favorite scenes and favorite lines. There is a question in the doc regarding a theory that people on Reddit have had about Peggy possibly being Tony's mom. And it is just a theory. It is not anything that has been confirmed.
That's not true, right?
It's difficult. Like, yes, in that we see Tony's parents die. We know that they die. You can also make the argument that, like, Tony's mom that he knows to be his mom is not biologically his mom. I think that the role of Peggy in Tony's life has been really understated, if not ignored. And I don't think we have enough information to fully debunk this, but I operate under the fact that she was probably just an Aunt Peggy to Tony in some way.
Yeah, I don't see why Peggy wouldn't. I don't see her as the type of person who would just let her son get away from her, you know?
Yeah.
Or who would. She's still alive the whole time.
Yes. Yeah. Karen, any thoughts on this?
Basically the same. I don't see Peggy allowing Tony, if he were her son, to just exist in the world without knowing that. I think we do have enough from the movies that, like, it's much easier to hide the fact that, like, maybe Howard Stark wasn't Tony's father versus Maria not being his mother.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very, very, very safe to assume that Peggy is not Tony's mom.
So I'm sorry we can't give a definitive answer to that, but operate.
No, I'm
going to
take that as definitive.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then the only other thing that I wanted to bring up is slightly selfish on my part, but I am a very big World War II culture history enthusiast, which may not be the right word for that, but I am fascinated by this time frame. And one of the things that I love about Agent Carter are the clothes as well as the setting. In so much as since we started talking about doing this show for our podcast, I have gotten the Peggy bug again, and I've been trying to dress more like her. So I'm wearing more like collared shirts, and I honestly would swap my full wardrobe for hers. I just love her outfits, and I love just the way that this world is set up and the different lighting techniques that they use. And I was curious how these things kind of played for the three of you. If you thought that was an interesting, if they did it well, if it was very much like transporting you back in time, and like how you feel about the styling choices in this show.
I think it's great. I mean, this is what I like. That's why when the scene was like, they didn't spend any money on this. I was like, I feel like they spent it.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically like on the clothes and on getting all of this right. What was the name of that makeup company, Danielle? Because I'm definitely going to look it up.
Yeah, Besame.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. You're not too far from them, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly where they're located, but I know it's in the area. And they actually do show up to like Disneyland Dapper Days a lot. Mm-hmm. So all of their makeup is, they try to be like historically accurate with it and kind of go back to the old ways of creating makeup. And so they have a lot of really cool stuff, and I would suggest checking them out.
Yeah. That sounds expensive, but fun.
It's not terrible. It's very much more than, like drugstore stuff. But it's not awful.
I also really like the style in the show. I think all of Peggy's outfits are incredible. Obviously, the iconic shot in the red hat going to work for the first time. Love that. Love her blue dress with the red stripes across the stomach.
Yeah, I do love that.
That one looks really great. The one thing that bugs me... Okay, so it kind of bugs me, it kind of doesn't.
Okay.
Her heels.
Yeah.
She's doing all this fighting. She's in heels. Half of me is like, that would be very painful and unrealistic, and you're not as well balanced on heels. And the other half of me is like, yeah, but she can do everything they can do in heels. So I don't know whether I like it or not.
I mean, when she goes to Roxxon, she's wearing boots. I think she's wearing one of the same outfits that she wore towards the end of the first Avenger when she's in at the end of this episode.
I remember specifically the one shot she was in heels.
Yeah.
So I could be mixing those up, but I'll have to keep an eye on it going forward. But like, I don't know, it is part of the wardrobe, especially back then, to be in skirts and heels and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, part of me is just kind of bugged by it, but the other part is like, yeah, but she could still kick your ass though.
This is like the Jurassic World conversation all over.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I actually love thinking about the fact that Peggy and Midge Maisel are probably coexisting right now, and they're both from very colorful universes, and they're both really badass and independent. And I would just, I would love a crossover where they meet. I don't even know what Midge could bring to the table other than comedy, but it would be so good.
She could be the third person to the, I haven't watched Mrs. Maisel yet, but if she's very comedic, she can be the third person to Peggy and Jarvis's straight men.
Yeah, and like the just how beautiful it is. I mean, that's what I think Mrs. Maisel is doing, a lot of the same things that Agent Carter did with. I especially noticed that with the shot of what is it, a switchboard?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that shot, it's very similar to a scene at the beginning of season two for Marvel's Mrs. Maisel. So I just enjoy that. I enjoy seeing the aesthetic expanded, you know? And I just love that they're doing something that's also very, you know, there's a lot of action, there's a lot of intrigue, but it's also colorful and fun, you know? It doesn't have to be dark.
Definitely. No, it does not have to be dark. This is not a dark Netflix kind of show.
And especially for this time period, I feel like a lot of people make it more drab and kind of seep the color out of it to make it feel old-timey, but it's very bright. And especially her outfits are very bold, and I do really appreciate that.
She's amazing. She is my style goals. I'm thinking maybe soon I will hit up like a Goodwill with all of the Marie Kondo cleaning that has been going on. Hopefully there'll be some nice 1930s looking pieces for me to just snatch up.
It's amazing.
So that's all that we had in our doc about the pilot episode. Was there anything that happened in the episode or anything that we did not bring up that anyone wanted to discuss?
I feel like I wanted to talk about Susan more, but that might be better placed as we continue on.
We didn't talk about him at all. The only thing I had for him, other than that he's probably evil but still cute, is that I did feel like it was super inappropriate when she told him that he was one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yes.
It made me uncomfortable. But also, it felt like a good balance to him kind of sticking up for her and the problems that we had with that. And I think that it shows, I don't know that this is what they intended, but I do think it shows that Peggy isn't infallible, that maybe she doesn't always say the right thing too or do the right thing, because clearly being disabled and everything, like, he's gonna feel weird when somebody says that to him.
Yeah, like he can make jokes about it, mm-hmm. but that doesn't invite someone else to provide commentary.
Right.
Yeah, especially after seeing how those guys were being super rude. Ugh. About him, like,
worse,
not being standing able to stand up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I do appreciate that he has a disability, and this is part of the show, that he's not just another regular guy, that he brings something different to the table and that there's a different kind of representation. So
yeah, different perspective.
Moving forward, as we get to know him more, everyone will have more thoughts on him and whether or not he's evil.
All right. Well, I want to leave that episode on that note because it's a little bit of a cliffhanger, I think. But let's dig into our favorite scenes and our favorite lines. My favorite scene was Peggy Carter beating a guy with a stapler. it's great. And it's a stapler. Karen, your favorite scene.
Didn't they say at the end, like, they're still pulling staples out of his face?
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. I love it.
Yep.
My favorite scene was when Jarvis passes Peggy the tissue during the super secret meeting, because he is so terrible at spying, but also it was really adorable.
That's so lovely. Ariana, your favorite scene?
It was definitely when Chad Michael Murray showed up. I'm so excited, you guys. I am ready for this 2004 nostalgia.
I am so excited about your excitement. It makes me really happy. So I'm glad that this could give that to you. And Nassim, your favorite scene?
I like the scene where the guys are, where it's Peggy and her coworkers, and the guys are being really dismissive, and then Sousa defends her, that one that we talked about. I enjoy it, not so much because, this is so much fun to watch, but because it's very interesting insight into the time period and into everyone's personality as well. It's unexpected, but it also feels like something that would happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. It feels very relatable,
mm-hmm.
or like very real. All right, and favorite lines. Mine was a small exchange between Jarvis and Peggy right after Howard speeds away in his speedboat. Jarvis asks, "What now, Miss Carter?" And Peggy just says, "Now I go to work." And it's kind of an iconic line, and I love it very much so. I also love Karen's. Karen, your favorite line, please.
Well, my favorite line is actually Ariana's, because she stole it, because it's clearly the best line in the episode.
But I mean, yes, full disclosure, same.
Aside from that, my favorite line is when Peggy's sort of scolding Jarvis for thinking like she's not going to need him after 9 p.m. for, like, spy stuff. And she goes, "Mr. Jarvis, you do realize that this job will have certain after-hours requirements." And Jarvis just goes, "So does my wife, Miss Carter. Good night." And I was like, "Ooh." I love Jarvis.
So great. So great. Ariana, please tell us your favorite line.
Mine is when Chad Michael Murray is telling her to file this stuff because she's so much better at that kind of thing. And she says, what kind of thing is that? The alphabet? I could teach you.
If there was like a prize for best comeback, it would probably go to that because it's wonderful.
And she's so quick at it, and she's mm-hmm. just staring him down, and he's just kind of doesn't know what to say.
Yeah. Oh, so good. And Nassim, your favorite line, please.
My favorite line is, don't you want to get in? When she's on the car. And Jarvis is just freaking out because he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to drive with her on top of his car.
Yeah, which is understandable. I would probably be reacting the same way he does.
For sure.
So good. I love him.
And then
so
she just deftly opens the door like it was nothing. So wonderful. Well, those were our favorite scenes and our favorite lines, as well as our thoughts about the Agent Carter pilot. But we want to hear from our listeners. We want to know what you enjoyed, what maybe you had questions about, or just any of your thoughts or comments, either about the episode itself or this episode. So please, please, please get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable, and you can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you know, we love talking to everyone and we love doing this podcast, and we really want our family to grow. And so you can help us do that by leaving us a review on iTunes. And for those of you who are new to the podcast, every week we give out a sort of incentive to leave us a review. Karen has followed through on a couple in the past, so just keep that in mind. But this week's incentive for a 5-star iTunes review is, if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will put on her blonde wig and gold dress that she keeps locked in her closet for special occasions just for you. Karen?
So, fun fact, I have a blonde wig. I do not have a gold dress.
Well, that can be arranged.
That could be arranged, though.
So, you never know. It could happen. So, please leave us 5 stars, and I guess you'll find out. So, we are admittedly recording this podcast episode a little bit ahead of time.
We're early for once.
We're early for once. Yeah, it's very odd for us. And so we don't yet have any listener feedback because as you're listening to this, we're recording it before our episode, even our intro episode, I think, has come out. But we will love to hear all of your feedback in future episodes, and we will read it all, I promise. So before we go, we have one more thing that we have to do. And this segment is all about predictions. And so this week we have Ariana's assumptions and Nassim's narrative about Agent Carter, season 1, episode 2, entitled Bridge and Tunnel. Ladies, got any thoughts?
I think that Agent Carter gets invited to go play a game of bridge. Mm. And there she makes a bunch of other women friends, and they band together and do things. And they decide that they are going to drive a car through a tunnel to go somewhere cool.
Love it.
I predict that Peggy is going to have to run a lot, because her coworkers are onto her now. Because, I mean, I don't think they know who that it's her, but she's going to have to cover her tracks more. And I think Jarvis's wife is going to start wondering what the heck he's doing on the phone so late. And I think she needs a new roommate. Like, where is she going to live now? So maybe she's going to go hunting for an apartment.
That's why she's living under the bridge inside a tunnel.
Yeah. Exactly. She has to pick between one of the two. Bridge and tunnel, which one? Awful Peggy. Where will she put her hats?
Where will she put her hats? That is a very good question. But Maybe we'll find out the answer to that question and many others in our next episode. But until then, I want to leave it there. Thank you all for joining us, for listening in, and we will see you right back here next week. I'm Danielle.
I'm Karen.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Nassim.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.